From what we learn about the recent would-be Trump assassin, he seems to have clearly been an asset of the deep state. He's been criminally charged over 100 times, including once for possessing an unregistered fully automatic firearm. He was recruiting mercenaries to fight in Ukraine and was on the mainstream news to discuss this.
This conflict is definitely black and white. This is about good versus evil. We're battling a situation here where, you know, the Ukrainians and the rest of the world are caring and kind and generous and unselfish, and for some reason Russia does not grasp this concept that we're all one unit. Seems asinine that we have a leader in a country that does not understand the concept of being unselfish and being generous.
He appeared in a video promoting the Azov Brigade. And despite all this, he was somehow able to get a rifle across state lines and within shooting distance to Donald Trump just 2 months after a failed assassination attempt. As Edward Snowden pointed out, there is an Oswald vibe here. And he's right. Almost every assassination conspiracy in history has the same telltale signs. Take deep state heavyweight George H.W. Bush, for instance. Although he said he didn't remember where he was that day, George Bush was in Dallas when JFK was shot. He confidentially reported into the FBI with a cryptic message an hour after the assassination from the Sheraton Dallas Hotel. During this time, George Bush was covertly working for the CIA. CIA asset George de Morenschildt, who became friends with Lee Harvey Oswald a year before the JFK assassination, was family friends with George Bush. Bush wrote in an internal CIA memo that he first met him in the early 40s and was associated with him for over a decade. Fast forward to when George Bush was vice president alongside President Ronald Reagan, and Reagan was shot by John Hinckley. The Hinckley family was friends with the Bush family since the 1950s when they were neighbors in Midland, Texas. The Hinckleys were donors to George Bush's political campaigns and supported George W. when he first launched his political career. The families were still close at the time of the shooting, but this was ignored by the media. George Bush's son, Neil Bush, said that he was scheduled to have dinner with John Hinckley's brother, Scott, the day after the shooting, and told the press that Scott Hinckley had been at his house for his surprise birthday party a couple months earlier. John Hinckley Jr. was living with his parents during the time he shot Reagan. His father, John Hinckley Sr., was employed at World Vision, a nonprofit funded by CIA proxy USAID. The lone gunman who shot and killed John Lennon, Mark David Chapman, was also an employee of World Vision. In the fall of 1980, Hinckley was arrested at Nashville Airport, carrying three guns, and was believed to have been stalking President Jimmy Carter, the political opponent of George Bush at the time. The police let him go. Right after that, Hinckley was reportedly stalking the actress Jodie Foster and claimed to have been hearing voices in his head. Notes written by Hinckley were later found where he wrote of a conspiracy to assassinate the president. This was dismissed by his parents as being an imaginary conspiracy and ignored by the court. Dozens of pages concerning Hinckley's personality, his associates, and his financials were deleted by the FBI, and it was decided that Hinckley was insane and acting alone. He was sent to St. Elizabeth's Mental Hospital, a hospital with a long history of involvement with the CIA's MKUltra program. This is just a quick glimpse at one of the many old soldiers of the deep state. This sort of thing has been going on forever. The only difference now is that the younger generation, most likely victims of trauma-based mind control themselves, don't seem to have the skills or the motivation that their parents and grandparents once had. And because of the internet, more people are seeing it and pushing for the truth. And maybe someday we will stand up against it rather than watch it slowly eat us all. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
For
First of all, we want to avoid the middle of the grocery store and stick to whole foods, real food. But these days, even the real food is short of its nutrient potential. And this is why it's important to take a vitamin mineral supplement every day. According to studies, regular multivitamin mineral supplement use reduces the risk of cancer and cardiovascular disease. Perhaps supplements aren't important to you, but in today's upside-down world, a daily vitamin mineral supplement is a must, and we have one of the best. Support your health and support the InfoWar. Get your vitamin mineral fusion today at InfoWarsStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geyser. Joining me is Ian Carroll on The Alex Jones Show. Ian, I'm so sorry to be sitting in this chair instead of Alex Jones, but he did tell me that he wanted to book you again next week so that you could be on with him as well. I have been a fan of your work for I probably came across you maybe a month ago, and I've just been following everything that you post. It's absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for coming on the show and being patient with me today.
Dude, it's an honor to talk to you, Chase. I was just watching the reporting you were doing in the last hour, and your reporting is always spot on, man. Couldn't be more pleased to be here.
I appreciate that, man. Well, it's an honor and pleasure to be with you. So typically when this celebrity stuff comes out, I kind of ignore it because the Hollywood stuff is often a distraction. And of course, they're just living these hedonistic lifestyles. But there's something about this Diddy story that seems definitely relevant to the political conversation. He seems kind of like a clone of some of the Epstein reporting that we saw. Can you please just kind of explain to me, as someone who knows very little about the details of this case and what's going on, and for the sake of the audience, there are many in the audience who probably aren't major P. Diddy fans, who might not be familiar with the details, what happened and what have you discovered that isn't being reported?
I mean, I'm with you. I'm not a P. Diddy fan either, and I basically tuned out of rap music when I was a kid, when rap took this weird turn from people writing thoughtful lyrics to gangster rap and ho culture and everything else. And these lawsuits and allegations and charges really highlight how and why that happened. And so if anyone's not familiar, P. Diddy is an instrumental figure in the rap industry. He's a producer that runs a large portion of the rap industry through his Bad Boy Records. And it started with rumors in the rap industry for a long time about Diddy. And those have been going on for over a decade. Sure. And then Cassandra Ventura dropped a lawsuit about his abuse of her when she was his girlfriend that was very salacious and very dark and gross. That ended in a settlement, and a lot of the details were obscured. And then last year, another lawsuit dropped from a producer named Lil Rod, who had worked with Diddy on an album that alleged all kinds of spicy dirt. It didn't just allege that P. Diddy was involved. It directly named Lucian Grange, the CEO of Universal Music Group, UMG was responsible for 33 out of the top 100 songs on last year's top 100. Yeah. It directly named a whole bunch of other people involved in the industry. It talked about a massive conspiracy, not just of drugs, guns, sex trafficking, but also minors, hidden cameras wired up in all of Diddy's homes, recording blackmail footage at all of these freak-off parties. And it started to look a lot more like a Jeffrey Epstein-style operation running in the rap industry. Those bigger pieces are missing from the actual reports from his recent arrest, but it's unclear whether that's because they're actually covering it up or whether it's because they're working their way through a RICO investigation and they're only dropping charges little by little so that they can fry bigger and bigger fish.
Now, many people have speculated that the Epstein blackmail operation was at its core politically motivated. With the Diddy blackmail, from our speculation and what we've seen and what you've seen, does it seem to be more business motivated, or do you think that it was politically backed?
This is where you really have to get into some interesting speculation and put on your own brand of tinfoil. But it's hard to distinguish the line between politics and culture in today's world, especially when you think about like the Taylor Swift endorsement of Kamala Harris and other such celebrity sort of projections of opinion. And if you think about Jeffrey Epstein, he was really good at swimming through all sorts of powerful circles in Hollywood, in politics, in science. But one place where Jeffrey Epstein would not have been able to swim and create blackmail was in black culture, was in the hip hop and rap industry, which is a very big part of American subculture and is a very big part of sort of the way that kids grow up thinking about the world and the way that a huge portion of America thinks and votes, as well as spends money. And so from the political angle, there is a huge value to having blackmail in the rap industry. But from a money angle, there's also huge value in controlling the rap industry, because the rap industry is unique in the sense that it is deeply tied to not just a large portion of consumerism, but also to drugs and liquor and partying and the whole way that young people grow up thinking about sort of what is their meaning of life. And that's where you start to get to these kind of wild, darker conspiracy theories that seem to have more and more evidence every year of operations that are specifically designed to corrupt young people's minds, because I can't think of any soil more fertile for a blackmail culture than a culture where kids are growing up into being adults that idolize partying and drugs and debauchery and sex, right?
Right.
And so in a certain way, there's a lot of different avenues.
Well, a lot of that was happening in the late 60s when MK Ultra was in its prime. We had the hippie movement, which was its own version of this. Both advocated a hedonistic lifestyle for different reasons, right? The hippies really had this peace and love, do whatever you want, kind of hedonistic, polyamory type culture that disguised itself behind this just peaceful, loving philosophy. But it was the same behaviors that came out of that we see come out of this rap culture, which is just explicitly stating it wants to do these bad things for the sake of its own success and satisfaction, right? So even though the face of what is happening has changed between the hippie movement, of course, and rap, the outcome is the same. People living a hedonistic lifestyle, putting off the having children and starting families, doing a bunch of drugs. I mean, a lot of the hippies that were all peace and love wound up really screwed up. And you can see it captured perfectly in Forrest Gump with what happened to Jenna, right?
And also it's worth noting that the hippie movement in a lot of ways subverted what was at first a very cogent and organized anti-war movement,
yeah,
protesting Vietnam. And then the introduction of the drugs and the partying and the rock and roll turned what was sort of like a suit and tie anti-war protest into a kind of debauched, disorganized movement.
Right.
Of like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? And so you look at today's world and you think, okay, black people have a lot of gripes with the modern world, but if they're all subverted into partying and drinking and showing off their chains, they're not going to be a huge problem for the establishment.
Absolutely. So here's the next question. If this has been going on for decades, I mean, you go back and see South Park episodes from 10 years ago. You can see Ashton Kutcher interviews where he's talking about how he can't tell the details of what happened at some of these freak-off parties. If this has been going on and rumored for decades, similar to what was rumored about Weinstein, why now is he facing the music? No pun intended.
Yeah, well, I love this question, because you can go all the way to the depths of like, there's a controlled operation going on, to pure coincidences. And it's hard to parse out the evidence of why now with any concrete certainty, but it does feel like we've been getting a sort of like mounting disclosure. And regardless of where you fall on your personal belief of how organized sort of the political resistance to this evil is, I think that there is an argument to be made that everything has an equal and opposite reaction. And so the more debauched our culture and our world gets, the more internal pushback in good people there is. Mm. And so I think you can only take the world into so much evil before good pushes back. And I think that that's what we're seeing, is that we're seeing good pushing back in all realms, political, cultural, like social. And so I like to be optimistic because otherwise the world is so depressing. And I think that we're going to see a lot more. I don't think that this is going to be a shut and closed case. I think they might try to kill Diddy, but I'm not sure they're going to succeed, because just like when the 2020 election had all sorts of weird things going on that year, people weren't really prepared to deal with all that weirdness and corruption. But this year, 2024, there's a lot more organized resistance. There's a lot more poll watchers. And so I think that naturally you can only get away with evil for so long before the light shines in.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a motif in some of our most revered and cherished stories, like whether it's Star Wars or Lord of the Rings, this notion that evil slowly over even thousands of years accumulates more and more power unnoticed by good people just tucked away in the Shire until it's almost too late to respond to it. And then it's like a miracle that there's enough resistance at the last second. Like they would have waited 1 week later to start the mission to bring the Ring to Mordor, it would have been too late, right? That's a motif. And I think that's one of the biggest weaknesses of I don't even want to say Republicans, because Republicans, I believe in the uniparty, of patriotic Americans is a better way to put it. One of the biggest weaknesses, I think, of patriotic Americans is that we're always reactive to assaults on our freedoms instead of proactive about protecting them, right? The left is very progressive. They're very proactive. They constantly launch attacks and assaults, and we're constantly trying to react. So they're the white pieces in the chess game. They get the first move, and that's a disadvantage for us perpetually.
Absolutely. And I think that there's something sort of coded into like liberal versus conservative mindsets, like you say, is like progressive is naturally taking action and conservative is naturally trying to hold back and like maintain what's been. And I think that at a certain point, like certainly we've had a uniparty for a long time, but you can only run sort of mainstream propaganda in one direction. You can't mainstream propaganda, like the whole news world can't all be saying that the left is good and the right is good at the same time. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point around Bush to Obama transition, and from my perspective, there seems to have been a major shift from turning the sort of mainstream narrative towards the left, because I think that in a modern world with the internet, with all this interconnectedness, I think there's a lot more opportunity for control in the ideology of the greater good, in the ideology of like social progressivism, because suddenly you can sort of trick people into becoming the thought police. You can trick people into doing all sorts of things as long as you control the information space. And so they went from controlling things through money and politics and just straight up warmongering to sort of controlling information and creating this mind virus of collective groupthink that has really eaten our culture for the last 20 years. And I think that it's starting to come unraveled.
Well, we've seen too from the deep state that freedom of speech has never been more under attack in the United States, in my opinion, than it is now. I mean, you can go back to Ginsburg and Howell and things like that and make a case that there was an attack on freedom of speech in the 50s and 60s. But it seems like for the last decades, freedom of speech was always okay in the eyes of the deep state as long as they had a monopoly on what the conversation was. So you can say whatever you want to say, but we have such control over the narrative and the conversation because there's only 3 to 5 major networks, you know, back in the old days of cable. Through Mockingbird, they got in and infiltrated all the major media outlets as part of the Cold War, you know, Red Scare type thing. And there was never an assault on freedom of speech because the conversation was contained under control. But with the advent of social media and the internet, yes, they can control with algorithms and manipulations in a more powerful way, but it has poked holes in the ship that is their monopoly over the conversation with places like X and Telegram and others, which are under attack on their own. Now they don't control the conversation with a total monopoly, so then we see them compensating by trying to attack freedom of speech directly with the Tim Walz is coming out and saying that misinformation isn't protected. I had people replying to me yesterday on X saying that lies aren't protected free speech, and I just said that is a lie in and of itself. How is this going to play out? And I'm somebody who, even if the black pill is the correct pill, I refuse to swallow it because it guarantees our failure as a species if we concede defeat prematurely. And so I'm not willing to take that risk of being blackpilled because the black pill guarantees that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So what is next? How is this going to play out? What do we do? It seems like they tried to attack, to assassinate Trump 3 times now. I'm worried about Elon Musk. I'm worried about Alex Jones. What the hell is going to happen in the next 6 months, Ian?
I agree 100% about the black pill. Our thoughts create reality. They're very powerful. And being pessimistic is a surefire way to lock yourself into a bad future. I think that in the way you just described, the media was so controlled when it was centralized before we had the internet, and that's a pretty easy space to control, and Mockingbird did it pretty well. But with the advent of social media, we thought that we got a lot more free speech, but I think that until Elon bought X, we didn't actually realize that that was not free speech, right? Before Elon bought X, every single platform was actually controlled. We learned through the Twitter files that the CIA was directly, and other government agencies were directly just messaging all of these platforms and saying, you need to censor this, take this down, ban those accounts. And it's so obvious now that we have what is almost free speech on X, that what we had before was actually controlled from the get-go. Because ever since MySpace, like Facebook, Instagram, like you name it, old Twitter, all of those were controlled in the exact same way. And so once Elon bought X and took it private, so it could no longer be attacked through the standard ways that public corporations are controlled, that's when we opened the floodgates. And that's why I'm so optimistic right now. And that's why I think they're on the back foot and scrambling to get control of the narrative, because now that we have free speech and it's so much faster than the mainstream media, like mainstream media is being forced to report on all these assassination attempts because we're the ones reporting on it first. And shows like yours are breaking actual news with actual evidence and information. And once it's on the public space, then the news can't ignore it. They can't just openly like lie. You know, there's a line that they can't cross. And so Elon having X open and then other platforms like Rumble and Gab and whatever else, those are sort of paving the way to force the conversation to be more free. And I think that they have no answer to that other than to try to go directly after the First Amendment. And I don't think they can pull that off, because despite the brainwashing that's happened, despite the propaganda, I think that there's an element where once you start going after the most basic human liberties like free speech, there's really no way to distinguish yourself from the USSR and other tyrannical regimes throughout history. And that is going to be self-apparent, self-evident to, you know, millions of Democrats and people that were otherwise taken in by the propaganda. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's going to work.
You know, I agree with you. And what you said about the deep state having control and attacking freedom of speech on social media in recent years especially is certainly true. They seem to have still had that monopoly up until X was privatized. But there does seem to have been a honeymoon period with some of these big tech platforms 10 or 15 years ago before they had been completely compromised. Like, for example, I discovered who Alex Jones was because YouTube in 2012 suggested to me the Bohemian Grove documentary as a suggested video to watch based on watching Ron Paul videos or something, right? That would never happen now. I think there was a time when free speech was abundantly prevalent on the internet, 2012, 2010, you know, gosh, that's 14, 15 years ago now. Time flies when you're having fun. But then around 2016, they really hammered down against it. What are your thoughts on that dynamic?
I think you're absolutely correct. And I think that it was in that early phase that they realized how screwed they were if they let that keep going. And so they quickly locked down all those platforms that were spreading, you know, information freely. But another example is that every now and then a platform comes along that is not controlled yet. And usually that can't happen within the mainstream, like American landscape, because corporatism is so powerful and monopolies are so protected. But TikTok is a great example of a business that came to power overseas where it wasn't captured already. And once it came into America and took American youth by storm, there was a honeymoon period where TikTok speech was very free and things were spreading very fast through features like the download button. And that freaked them out. And for a couple of years there, people were flocking to TikTok because that's where information was. And fortunately, I got in there right before they started to clamp it down. And it was the first TikTok ban that they attempted, where they put in Project Texas. And basically, they threatened to get rid of TikTok unless you agree to these terms. And those terms were bringing all of TikTok's data centers and oversight over TikTok's algorithms into U.S. soil under the oversight of Oracle Corporation. And if anyone's not familiar with Oracle Corporation, it was founded by Larry Ellison right after he shut down his CIA project called Oracle. And then he opened this totally different business called Oracle Corporation, which was a CIA contractor for the first really ever since. It survived off CIA money for many years. And Larry is one of the leading proponents of a government surveillance state to this day.
Well, I mean, just look at the Oracle reference from The Matrix. The character of the Oracle is this all-knowing, omniscient, omnipotent being. That's what must have been the inspiration.
Ever since that court case, that TikTok has been sliding downhill faster and faster ever since then, about a year ago, because censorship has ramped up incredibly hard on TikTok. And I started there, and I'm basically now just an X creator because TikTok, I can't even publish my stuff there or else I'll get banned.
What have you noticed in terms of differences between Instagram and TikTok? Instagram seems to be much more forgiving. I've been through at least a dozen TikTok accounts. I get up to like 30,000 followers and then I get deleted. And I start another one. I get up to 30,000 followers. Right. But Instagram, it seems to kind of shadow ban. Like every time I post on Instagram, I lose 100 followers of my 68,000 or whatever. But they don't seem to outright explicitly silence you.
I'm very confused by Instagram, honestly. I do not understand it because I've never had a video taken down. I've never gotten a strike or a warning, and I post all stuff. And TikTok is very much like the censorship space. And I think there might be an element where because TikTok is being threatened by the U.S. government to be banned completely, they have this existential threat. So they actually have AI algorithms like scanning all their content, just censoring like crazy, regardless of whether it actually violates. They're just erring on the side of ban it anyways. Instagram doesn't do any of that, and I don't know why. And I'm looking forward to the day when maybe we get some answers as to that, because Facebook censors like crazy. So there's a different profile to each of the platforms. And you could say, like, for sure, Instagram is much more apt to feed you cat videos for 5 hours all night than actual like information and news and conspiracies and whatever else.
They did introduce that feature where by default you don't see political content and you have to switch it on.
Yeah, you really have to kind of like curate your feed there. And so I think each platform has taken its own sort of like stance on how to control our thoughts. But it's important for us all to remember that the world is not simple. It's not like one cabal that's one table of people that's controlling every decision in the world. It's a whole bunch of self actors and individual groups looking out for their own self-interest. And they're all playing within this power ecosystem, kind of trying to do their own thing. And so there is inherently networks of conspiratorial thought. There's networks of power brokers and money. And you sort of have to parse out each individual instance of what's going on individually and really look for evidence for what's real, because you can't just generalize to the whole space of social media and say the same thing is happening everywhere.
Well, Ian, we've got about 90 seconds before we go to break. I want to keep you for the next 30 minutes too, if you can.
Absolutely.
Real quickly though, before we go to break, how do you think things would be playing out differently had X not been privatized by Elon Musk? If it remained Twitter, what would we be looking at right now?
We'd be in a very dark place. For one, we wouldn't know anything about the first Trump shooter, the alleged other Trump shooters at the first Trump shooting, the drones flying in that Trump shooting, all the weird cover-ups of the first Trump shooting. We probably wouldn't know anything about the second Trump shooting. They could have run with any narrative they wanted. We'd probably already be in war with Iran because they would have pinned the first Trump attempted assassination on Iran like they planned to do. Bibi had his whole speech lined up for the following week, totally just blaming Iran. Like, I can't even go in. I mean, we might have been in World War III before we even got to the first Trump shooting. And that's not to mention all the other exposure and, you know, lies that have been uncovered because of freedom of information. And so I think that if there's one takeaway from this year, it's that there is no more foundational bedrock for democracy and freedom than speech and information, because without that, nothing else matters. It's more base than war. It's more base than pharma. It's more base even than money. Speech comes before everything.
Absolutely. Ian Carroll, it's great to have you. More from you on the other side of this break. Stick with us, folks. Absolutely amazing insights.
It's Friday, August 16th, 2024. The world is changing. The globalist system is now attacking humanity. As their programs come to an end. The grid. A digital frontier. I tried to picture clusters of information as they move through the computer. What do they look like? Ships, motorcycles. With circuits like freeways. I kept dreaming of the world I thought I'd never see. And then, one day, I got in.
friend of mine, really smart guy, is our guest. And I'm just going to put this right up front. If I owned a restaurant, I would want to have the best, most delicious, healthy food at the most affordable prices where I got the biggest crowds in. So you had a great experience. You want to come back 100 times and I make money and I'm successful. You have a great time. You get treated right. I get treated right. That's a community. So let's say it again. People really responded to this truth. I've been on there 30 years. I've had gold sponsors for 28 years as sponsors. Only two companies, because if you want a numismatic, they'd sell it to you, but they would try to sell you gold and silver bullion with, you know, 10% markup or whatever to pay their bills and do it. And that's very fair. You barely do it. I don't know how Kirk does it, 8% with his crew and his everything and the quality and the marketing, but he does it. So he's paying for marketing and running his crew and doing all this stuff for 8% and no charge to sell it back. Everybody else does that. It's such a good deal. It's very frustrating. I know we have millions of people watching every hour, and a lot of folks are calling. He's getting thousands of calls when he comes on. That's great. But it needs to be tens of thousands of calls. I mean, this is so simple. In a world of fiat, you at least want to have a hedge that's in silver and gold. And if you look at what's happening, I am only going to try to push something that I believe I would personally do. And that I personally do. I mean, it's real simple. Do unto others as you would do unto you. That's the golden rule. And Christ said, actually, you need to go further, lay your life down for others. But when everybody's like that, you live in a great society because nobody's really having any problems. Everybody's a badass. Everybody's willing to sacrifice. So it is a no-brainer to call them, do a consultation, and get into silver right now. And if you want some gold, you know, maybe get an 80% silver, get some gold. But I think he's dead on. I don't think, I know. You would be all silver. That's what's going to go up, obviously. That's what's undervalued. Then you get the gold once it skyrockets, which is already happening. So you need to go to KEPM.com/gold. That's Kirk Elliott Precious Metals. KEPM.com/gold. And then InfoWars is the support. Or you can call 720-605-3900. And listen, if enough of you went there, because he does his sponsorship off of what percentage he gets, we could get reporters back, expand, do anything. I mean, already we would not be on air right now if it wasn't for his sponsorship. He takes us over the top to be in the black. Not much, but a little bit. And so I appreciate the crew staying with us through all this hell. It's been wild. We're still here by the grace of God, but you need to support this sponsor. It supports what we're doing. Plus, it's the best deal, the best company, the highest ratings. It's so simple. Call him now, 720-605-3900.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the Alex Jones Show. We are joined by the one and only, the great, the legendary Ian Carroll. I am Chase Geiser, your host for the remainder of the show. At the top of the hour, we are going to be taking your calls. I'll give out the number in about 15 or 10 minutes. But in the meantime, Ian, what's up with all these record executives spontaneously resigning? Is it connected to the Diddy story?
You know, it's a tough coincidence to try to parse out. I made a pretty fun video about it the other night. And at this point, you know, I'm reserving judgment because there is speculation that quarters could be ending at the end of this month, like fiscal quarters. So it could be a logical time for record executives to retire. But choosing the day after Diddy goes to jail as your day to announce your expedient retiree from, you know, a long career at the top of the music industry is pretty weird. And the guy that we're referring to specifically, I actually forget his name. I'll see if I can pull it up. But he has a lot of ties to very high up power players in the music industry. Like, he's worked with Lior Cohen is his real name, for quite some time. He's directly connected to Jay-Z. There's all sorts of questionable connections for this guy. And so it's hard to say, but if I was him, I would have thought a little harder before I announced my resignation from 300 Entertainment the day after Diddy went to jail, because I think that Diddy's going to squeal on a lot of people. He has a lot of information. He has a lot of tapes. And I think a lot of people are going to go down. And if you want, there's a whole other rabbit hole we can go down on this of a crazy thing that happened with the Doral shooter.
Yes,
in
2018. Please.
I've been researching. Okay? Yeah, Kevin Lyles is the guy I'm referring to specifically.
So what's the other rabbit hole you mentioned?
Do you remember that there was this guy that walked into Trump's hotel back in 2018, the Doral Miami Trump Hotel, and he shot the place up and had a little gunfight with cops, but really basically walked in to get arrested, and he got arrested, and then he gave this crazy interview, 30-minute long interview. You can find it on YouTube. His name is Jonathan Oatey, and he claims that he did this whole thing just so that he could convey a message to Donald Trump, warning him about assassination plots. He was a Diddy sex slave, allegedly. He gives all this information on Diddy and on the rap industry, the hip hop agenda. And this was all before anyone knew anything about Diddy, at least in the public eye. And so you can hear in the interview that the investigators are like, wow, this guy is schizophrenic and completely insane. Right. But then, you know, years later, we have confirmation, direct confirmation of a ton of the things he said. First and foremost being that Diddy did have male sex slaves, that he would have, you know, do things with his girlfriend and other people, and he would film, and all these other allegations that start to corroborate a lot of this guy's story. And he has this really interesting piece that he talks about what he calls the hip hop agenda.
Wow.
Yes, this is the guy.
I saw this clip on your account earlier.
So
you're working on a report about it, right?
Yeah. Say again?
I'm sorry. You're working on a report about it right now, right?
Yeah, I'm working on a report about it right now. I spent all last night analyzing the video and kind of digging into him. And so far today, I've been digging specifically into what he calls the hip-hop agenda, because he claims that he goes into all sorts of rabbit holes, and it's hard to assess what is real and what is just him doing internet research. And so take it all with a large grain of salt.
Yeah.
But the things that are corroborated in there relative to Diddy and the hip hop industry lend some credence to his understanding of the hip hop industry. And he would have direct knowledge of a lot of these things in Diddy's sphere, one of which being his allegation that the hip hop industry is used to traffic drugs around the country. And he specifically talks about how they would put liquid cocaine into alcohol bottles, which we know from the Diddy lawsuit is corroborated at least in allegations. And he claims that what they do is they smuggle drugs on the private jets of hip hop executives. And when you look into what celebrity hip hop stars own private jets, you wind up with Diddy being famous for having a jet that has intercontinental range. You wind up with people like Jay-Z. You wind up with people like Rick Ross, who Oatey also names as being gay and associated with Diddy and these sex parties. So you wind up with all of these corroborable claims that indicate that the hip hop industry and what is called the Black Boule, which used to be a secret society and now it's a fraternity. LeBron James has what looks a lot like the symbol for the Black Boule tattooed on his chest in a giant tattoo. So there's like all these pieces that line up with a very logical and somewhat corroborable claim of the hip hop industry not just being used for sexual blackmail, but also being used for drug smuggling, which is a critical component of the black markets and of the larger sort of global criminal conspiracy.
You know, you mentioned that you were working on this report, and I want to ask you this question, because on this network, we talk a lot about the importance of being an info warrior and being a keyboard warrior specifically. Used to be a jab to call somebody a keyboard warrior. It has connotations of the fat guy living in his mom's basement. But now with everything shifting into the metasphere and a metaphysical plane, really elections are won and lost in the digital realm. And so being a keyboard warrior is a way to be an activist. And so I always encourage the audience to do work like what you're doing. Can you talk a little bit about your process and method in putting together a report like this? Obviously, it's hard to find a lot of the information on the major search platforms because it's censored, on other social media platforms because it's taken down. How do you actually, first of all, discover that there might be a kernel of something awesome? And then once you discover that, drill down and find the gold?
Such a good question. Please come back to that question for me, the how of how I do it, in like 1 minute.
Okay.
After I go back into what you're saying here that is so important about this concept of the info war and being a keyboard warrior, because it's important, and I try to blast this message everywhere that I can, is that it used to be considered this weird, like, you know, conspiracy, or like, you're an idiot for doing it. But like, think for a second. The CIA, their job is to protect American soil, right? And now information is the most important part of any warfare, right? Wars are started and won and lost in information. And so our phones, this space is actually like where we fight.
It's the front.
Like, yeah, that's what conflicts happen. And the CIA knows that. All the intelligence agencies know that. And so foreign agencies are trying to infiltrate our information space, as well as our own, you know, deep state that is totally off the rec, off like the tracks. And so they're all feeding their stuff into the information space. And if the CIA is actually doing its job, then their job is to counter that information space. And the only way to counter bad information in a free speech country is to feed your own information in that feeds your narrative. And so we actually have a world now where it is the official job of intelligence agencies to feed us disinformation or information that goes with the state narrative. And so the whole, like, whether you think you're a keyboard warrior or not, every single human being that has a TikTok account, a Facebook account, an X account.
It's almost like a tug of war between truth and deception. And everybody's playing, whether they know it or not, and our objective is to pull harder toward the truth than the deep state can pull in their direction, but they're coordinated and they're centralized.
You are a unwitting combatant in the first layer of warfare today, regardless of whether you try to be or not. And many people that don't realize they're in this information war are taken in. And that's what you call a sheep, an NPC, whatever it is, right? And it's the people that have woken up to the nature of information today and to what's actually happening. They're the ones starting to think for themselves, to do their own research, and to actually ask the right questions. So all of you watching, you are all keyboard warriors, whether you know it or not. So don't take that.
You have been drafted into the info war. Your only choice is which side you fight on.
Bingo. So that is the important message to open on, is like, it's all of us. And then the how, because now that we've established that we are all a part of this, we're all in the army, so to speak, we're all in the war. How do you do it? And really, the first answer is just to start, is not to, like, you're not an expert. I am not an expert. No one's going to be an expert. You're never going to know everything. You're never going to get everything right. But a lot of people let that paralyze them from starting, because they think, oh, I'm not that smart, or I don't know that much, or I was never that good in school, or whatever it is. And that does not matter. You get better by doing it. And so the first thing is to just, like, when you see a video, the next time you see a cool video, or even this video right here, take a keyword phrase. Like, if I just said black boulet, type that into Google and see what comes up. And then as you read through it, just try to click on some links. And as your brain kind of comes up with questions, anytime you're reading something and you don't fully understand what it's saying, like if you pass through a sentence and it's talking about, like, I don't know, the Guantanamo Bay torture programs, you might like have heard of it. But if you don't actually know for sure what happened, maybe you should look that up a little bit and get some context. And so you start to, the more you practice this art form of realizing how much you don't personally know, like if you've heard about it in a YouTube video, that doesn't mean you personally know it. That means someone told you about it. So go look. I have to slow down so much because there's so much I don't know. And you start looking everything up and just typing things into Google, and you'll get better and better and better at it. Mm-hmm. You'll start to learn. Like, oh, if I want to know about money, I can go to opensecrets.com, or I can go to wallstreetonparade.com, or whatever the specific sources are. Or if you want to get to a website that is super shadow banned, maybe you have to go to archive.org, where they archive all these websites Google won't show you. So you start to develop these skills, but you only develop them by practicing and just trying and learning. And I think that the best way to sort of facilitate your own research, your own learning, is to have some sort of note-taking process, just like you do in school. Like, I grew up I was a teacher in my earlier life. My parents are both teachers. And so my actual skill set is teaching and learning. I know how to learn. And the way you learn is what
they do. So you and Tim Walz are both like the same guy.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so you need to have some sort of process by which you're recording what you're doing. Take screenshots. Write notes in paper. What I do is I use an app called Obsidian, where I can take screenshots and I can write in notes and I can keep it all connected and I can draw lines together. So that way, if I forget something, I can just go back to my Diddy page and I can look at it and say, oh yeah, That was the screenshot. That's the website I can put sources in. And it's not that that's something you need to refer back to. It's just that the process of recording what you've learned ingrains it in your brain in a deeper and deeper way. Because if you just hear it and then move on, if you just watch an Instagram reel or a YouTube video, it just goes in one ear and out the other. And it's so important to have some form of, if you want to know what's going on in this world, you've got to be keeping the information in your brain. So that way, when Kamala says, remember that, no, like literally 3 weeks ago, she said the exact opposite thing. So it's just a process of starting and doing the work. And it can be small, you know, it can be a little by little by little, or if you got a lot of free time, just dive down a rabbit hole that you think is fun.
So obviously your popularity has been soaring. I specifically noticed it on Instagram and X recently. Congratulations to you on that. Can you tell me a little bit about what it was or is that really popped? What's your most popular report of all time, or when did you notice that you crossed the threshold of obscurity into the realm of relevance?
It happened in phases, and it was strategic on my part. When I was getting into this, I intentionally had been studying the media landscape and thinking, like, how do you get into this and how do you orchestrate creating a platform to make a difference? And I purposely started on TikTok at the time, and I got lucky because TikTok was pushing their new long form content, 10-minute videos, mm-hmm. and my content naturally lends itself to, you know, 5 to 10 minute longer deep dives. And so I grew a really big audience on TikTok really fast by talking about the products in our grocery stores and going into grocery stores and taking photos and showing how the whole aisle is just owned by the same corporations that are all owned by the same banks and BlackRock. And that was such a good way to access everyone, because we all use those products and we all understand this monopoly that we're a part of. Left and right, doesn't matter, everyone gets it. And from there, once I started learning that actually there's all these other like aspects, like the CIA, like Jeffrey Epstein, all these things you're not allowed to talk about on TikTok, and I started to get completely shadow banned on TikTok, that's when I came to X. And on X, I had a lot of friends and I had a lot of following already, but it was the first Diddy case that really broke open. And shout out to Candace Owens. She picked up my reporting and gave me a lot of support. And that first Diddy case blew my platform up. Still to this day, it's some of my most viewed videos. And so when Diddy came back into the news cycle this week, it was like, thank you, Lord. Like, this is just a gift from above. And my platform has exploded again. There's been others along the way, but Diddy has played a huge role in it. The Trump assassination stuff this last week was another big one. It kind of comes and goes. And it's not, I think that a lot of people get too caught up, especially when you're trying to grow a social media platform or like whatever it is. I think people get so caught up in trying to be viral or create something that like will go big. And inherently, I think that that is the wrong way to look at it. It's like, I'm here to learn. I'm here because I realized that all of my opinions were based on YouTube videos and not on any real knowledge. And so I just wanted to figure out what was going on and be able to have conversations like this where I know what I'm talking about at least a little bit. And so that just led to me learning things and asking questions. And I still try to keep that as my guiding light, not of like what will be the biggest hit, but what is it that I don't understand? And what is it that I'm interested in learning about? And for me, I'm a big picture guy. So what I'm interested in is naturally kind of like the big stuff that a lot of people will be interested in, because I want to know like what's the big conspiracy, like what's really going on. And that leads to so many, I mean, that leads in every direction. And so there's no shortage of stuff for me to learn about and no shortage of fun rabbit holes for me to go down. But I don't think that the right way to look at it is trying to go big. Mm-hmm. I think the right way to look at it is trying to have integrity and be a good person and seek the truth at all costs, have humility, and don't get your ego all big and, you know, pretend like you know everything. Because the most important like base layer of it all is to remember that we're all leading by example. We're all showing each other the world we want by being who we are. And if we're all out here with a big ego trying to like bump elbows to like get a platform and compete, that is creating a world tomorrow where everyone's competing and not cooperating. And so I try my hardest to intentionally stay humble and just like be a good person to all my coworkers, like to people I'm, you know, making videos with, people that are doing research, just trying to like, because we're trying to create a world that's better tomorrow. And that means we have to be better today.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned something really briefly that piqued my interest. What is the big conspiracy in your opinion?
You know, I'm the jury's still out, but as of today, the way I see the world is that it's not simple. And so in order to give this in a simple way, I'll try to like pare the understanding down to maybe a couple of spheres, as in what controls the world? Money, power, people. Money is pretty clearly, you trace that rabbit hole up to the banks, up to the banking families. You know, that's a long storied history. It goes through things like the Rothschild banking family, which are still very much powerful to this day. The Rockefellers went in there. But it also comes to people like BlackRock. It goes to places like private equity. And a lot of that is extremely complicated on purpose, so it's hard for you to understand. But inevitably, it pretty much swirls up to a few people at the top having an insane amount of power to just manipulate incentives, not to directly instruct everyone what to do necessarily, but to incentivize behaviors that en masse.
Sure. They tried it with ESG and DEI and things like that.
Yeah. BlackRock's a big part of pushing those. Then there's the world of power, and that involves a lot of religion. It involves a lot of politics, and obviously it also involves money and everything else. And the world of power, you start to trace politics up, and you kind of disperse into various powerful families, various organizations and NGOs, like the World Economic Forum. A lot of this is stuff that Alex and your whole network, you guys talk about all the time, which is awesome because they're kind of constantly evolving new organizations, new corporations, new NGOs to be the new face of the world order, so to speak. And then so that's like money and it's like power. Well, and then I think the one thing that is most interesting to me that most people don't learn about in their regular lives is the black markets and sort of the criminal underbelly of the world. And I see that as including intelligence agencies, because intelligence agencies were essentially founded because the US government wanted to do things that they didn't want anyone to know about. That's the whole point of an intelligence agency, is to do covert operations, to do things that have a degree of separation. So if the operation gets exposed, hopefully the whole world doesn't find out that the CIA was directly linked to the guy that just tried to shoot Trump, for example. And so the covert intelligence agencies partnered with organized crime very early on, as I'm sure a lot of your viewers know, and they've been buddy-buddy ever since. And so understanding drug trafficking, arms trafficking, sex trafficking, and human trafficking, all of those criminal organizations, that is sort of the final bucket of what I see in all of these different sort of bases of power in the world. They work together, like blackmail in the black markets, that influences the politics and the money. The money over in the banking sector, that influences the politicians and the black, like they all interplay. And so they're inherently all aligned. And I think that there's different factions. You know, there seems to be, Trump has a lot of allies. He has a lot of people that he's, you know, powerful people that he's come up with and still supports and support him. And then there's clearly like a Democrat group that is, Lord knows what's connected to that. And I'm sure there's other international players too, like Russia is aligned somewhere, China is aligned somewhere. And so it's extremely complicated. But inherently, we're not on any of those teams, except for me. Like, I want to hope, I want to believe that Trump and RFK have people around them that do have the people in mind. But it's important not to put anyone on a pedestal and not to pretend like billionaires are ever really going to be on our team. So,
Well, I want to show the audience the overhead cam here, because as you were talking, I was kind of charting this out, and there's something first of all, I think that's one of the most brilliant responses that I could have ever heard from anyone in the history of the world at all. And I never thought of it like that, to actually tier it. You know, we think of checks and balances in the government, legislative, judicial, and executive branch. You think of the three arms of corruption. You've got money, power, in the black market. And the thing that's interesting to me looking at this, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, you've got the money here, power here, black market. The only way the money thing works is if people agree to take out loans and pay interest, right? Usury. Yep. The only way that the power works is if the people put into power the wrong people because they're ignorant. And the only way the black market works is if people demand debauchery, whether it's sex trafficking or drugs, right? So if you have a moral people who are enlightened, who are not dependent on an unjust financial system, then all of these corrupt structures, the bedrock of corruption, just totally collapses. So the solution is for people to understand the truth versus the lies. It is the info war. I mean, we can't fix either of these from the top down. We have to attack from the bottom up, right?
You have put it so perfectly, Chase, because it really does come down to a war of good and evil. And exactly like you've just elucidated, in a world where debauchery and corruption and lies and our basest lustful human instincts are incentivized, then a black market concept in all those worlds, like a corrupt version of all of that, thrives. And everyone's incentivized to be corrupt because that's how you get to the top of all three of those systems. But in a world where good people stand up and take power for themselves and end all of that corruption, suddenly money is about a free market where we're cooperating, right? Suddenly politics and like the power structures of government are about us cooperating to create a better world. Suddenly the black market is no longer incentivized, and instead the white markets are incentivized. And so you're so right that it's like all comes back to the core of our culture of what do we incentivize in our own moral fiber. And the more of us that look in our own hearts and establish a strong moral fiber of goodness, the more that radiates out into every, the more of us that can be good and incentivize within our own lives good structures and good morals, the more that the black markets of the darker versions of all this loses its power, right? Because it's only maintained by corrupt politicians being able to be put into power. You need corrupt people to do that. Corrupt bankers and financiers taking advantage of the monetary systems. You need corrupt people to do that. You know, corrupt arms traffickers, drug traffickers, human traffickers, you need both the consumer and the trafficker for that to exist. And so the more of us that stand up to corruption and poor, evil, degenerate social morals, the more everything can start to change. Change starts from with.
And all these institutions have an incentive to debase the culture and the people. Right. And I'm sorry for the language there. You know, we have a family audience. Ian Carroll, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the Alex Jones Show. Thank you so much for spending an hour with me. I do want to take calls from the audience in the next hour. So please call in 877-789-2539. Again, that's 877-789-2539. The sooner you call, the more likely I am to get to you. The duration of the final hour of the Alex Jones Show today. I will be taking your calls. Open lines, as always. You can talk to me about anything you want. This has been one of the most fascinating conversations that I've ever had here with Ian Carroll. And it's such an honor and a pleasure and a privilege to have had the opportunity to speak with him. Please follow him, support his work. He's absolutely outstanding, as you can tell now that you've heard him speak for an hour on some of these questions that are seldom asked. Absolutely fascinating. In the meantime, please, after you are waiting on hold by calling 877-789-2539, open up another tab in your phone and go to thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. We've got amazing t-shirts, amazing hats, amazing products available, and every dollar you spend until the end of the day today will enter you 10 times in the contest for the most amazing $138,000 Dodge truck. Plus $10,000 in cash. Driving this truck is the second best feeling in the world, guys. Stick with us for more on the other side.
Today's conspiracy theories, tomorrow's truths.
Some of these conspiracy theories have turned out to be true.
Which ones?
The Trump-Russia witch hunt, Jeffrey Epstein, JFK assassination, the misuse of the Patriot Act, the Iraq war, the weapons of mass destruction, the war in Ukraine, the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline, the open border migration caravans, the climate change scam, chemtrails, and HARP, and 9/11 being an inside job, and the Internet of Things surveillance grid, and PFAs, and chemicals in the water turning everyone gay, and the 2020 election being stolen, and January 6th being filled with undercover feds, and Bilderberg, and Bohemian Grove, and global government, not to mention gain-of-function research, and the threat of China, and collapsing birth rates, and defund the police, and George Soros, and mail-in ballots, and big tech censorship, and disinformation agencies, and Obama's birth certificate, and probably some others I can't think of. I mean, so a few of them. I guess a couple of them have been true.
You will meet so many amazing people wearing the shirt. I'd say you'll get probably 50 compliments before you get one person screaming at you.
Donald J. Trump is now President of the United States.
But it's an adventure to wear any of these shirts, but particularly this one. Get this design and so many others. They're limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on air in our fight against the globalist. And I want to thank you so much for your support, because literally, When you call in thanking me on air, I say stop, because I'm thanking you. I love fighting the globalists. This is what I do. We've had such a huge effect together. So I want to thank you all for your past support. Encourage you now to go to thealexjonesstore.com and be sure to enter for the free truck and $10,000 and buy more product, support the broadcast, and get entered 5 or 10 times, depending on the day, each time you buy a product. This new initiative is so important to the future. So everybody, if you support what we're doing and want to get great shirts and ball caps at the same time, go to thealexjonesstore.com. And I almost forgot, most of these shirts come in multiple colors.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.